Hey, and welcome back to the Entrepreneurs Podcast, the podcast for and by female entrepreneurs in college.
Today, we are delighted to have on Amanda Pollinger, CEO of 100 Women in Finance, an organization focused on empowering women in the finance industry and inspiring the next generation of pre-career young women. Amanda graduated from Brandeis College, Oxford University in 1987 with an honors degree in modern history. She earned an MBA from LaSalle University in Philadelphia and received an academic award for MBA Student of the Year. Amanda is a former principal of Aquamarine Capital Management, where she was responsible over a seven-year period for managing marketing, investor relations, and back-office administration for two private investment funds.
Amanda is the chair and non-executive director of the board of Fly Plymouth, based in Plymouth, UK. She also serves on the board of the Halo Trust, the American Friends of the National Portrait Gallery Foundation, and is the director on the Oxford University Alumni Board. She's the president of the Brazenose Society, vice chair of the Women's Network Forum, and an advisory board member of the Harambe Entrepreneur Alliance. Previously, she served as the chairman of the board of the Halo Trust.
Join us as we talk with Amanda about how she learned the power of simply asking for more as a female entrepreneur will get you more. Every failure is an opportunity to learn, and why building up your skill set and network as a young entrepreneur can be your best investment for your career ever.
Hello, and welcome back to the podcast. We are so excited to have today, Amanda.
Hi, nice to see you.
Thank you so much for coming on. We are really, really, really excited to have you. So just to get started, we'd love to ask you, what is something that excites you when you wake up in the morning?
Well, I have to say I'm very fortunate that my job excites me. So I am the CEO of a global association for professionals in the finance industry called 100 Women in Finance. And what gets me excited and what I'm passionate about is I want to see the demographics of this industry change. Right now, there are certain elements of the industry, particularly on the investment side, that are heavily male dominated. And by the way, I have nothing against men. I think men are wonderful. But as we all know, in dealing with a complex world, we need to have diverse perspectives, not only so that we can see where the opportunities lie. And of course, in investing in particular, you need to know where the new opportunities lie, but equally in understanding where are the hidden risks. And if you have a more diverse population around a table, there are people who've had experiences that are different from others, and therefore they can say, are you sure we should be doing it this way? My experience, you know, this and this and this could happen. So let's just make sure that we're setting it up. So diversity matters for lots of different reasons. And so I am every day waking up thinking of ways that we can ensure that we're not only empowering women in the finance industry to take hold of those opportunities, but equally that we're inspiring the next generation of young women, teenage girls, young women at university, to look at finance as somewhere that they would like to come and work. And so it is a challenging role, but I'm excited because when I see a young woman's eyes light up, when she has that aha moment that actually investing is really cool, developing a product that can help women in Africa in terms of payment systems and being able to empower those women through that fintech solution, and they see that that's possible and cool, right? That's what makes me get up every day, is constantly thinking, how are we going to change this world of finance?
Amazing.
I absolutely love that. And especially since, like, as college students, we kind of come in and not really knowing what we want to do. And oftentimes you look at the clubs, and like the finance clubs especially are so male dominated. It's so wonderful to see and so inspirational to see that you're kind of paving a new path. I was wondering, how did you get into this, and like, where did it all start?
So, you know, I used to be really nervous about telling my story because it sounds so schizophrenic. And you'll see why when I tell my story, because now it's become part of who I am. And I actually think it's a positive that I've had so many different experiences in different industries. But I started my life in Birmingham in the UK. And this is where I grew up. And I was the first in my family to go to university. And I went to Oxford and read modern history. And I went to Oxford because of a woman that I actually never met, and that was Margaret Thatcher. So as a young teenage girl, Margaret Thatcher was our first female prime minister. And it wasn't just about the fact she was our first female prime minister, because I didn't end up going into politics. It was the fact that in all of the publicity around her career, there was conversation around the fact that she was the first in her family to go to university, that she went to a local school, right? She didn't go to a fancy girls' school. And so as that young teenage girl growing up, I said to myself, like me, she was the first to go to university. And like me, she went to a local school, right? If she can get to Oxford, I can get to Oxford. And so I talk about that because actually one of the things that's really clear to me is that we don't, as an industry, and in fact, as many industries that I've been through that are male dominated, we don't do a good enough job of ensuring that young women see those visible role models. And yes, there are few women in the finance industry, particularly at the top and particularly in investing, but there are not none. And so part of my mission is really to encourage those women to be visible to the next generation. So that was the beginning of my story. And what I would say is that not only was I the first in my family to go to university, I knew nobody, and nobody in my family knew anybody who was in business. But it took being at university for me to meet friends whose parents, largely fathers, were in business. And so it shifted my perspective of what I wanted to do when I left. When I went to Oxford, when I went to Brasenose College, I thought I'd be a teacher because I knew teachers around me. I ended up going into business. And that's because over those years, I was exposed to opportunities and I had people saying to me, hey, you should look at this or that or the other. So university is a great opportunity to explore all that. So when I left university, I joined a company, which is a large global conglomerate focused on environmental, part of it, which was focused on environmental services. This was the late 80s, and in the UK, privatization of a lot of services was beginning to happen, including waste disposal. It sounds very glamorous, right? My first day on the job was on a landfill site in a place called Mucking in Essex, where the company took all of the domestic waste out of London in containerized barges along the Thames. And I actually traveled that journey with the lightermen, that's their term, who are the men, and they were all men, who are driving the barges along the, or piloting the barges along the Thames. And so that first day on the job was, as I always say, the first day in a career that spans seven different industries, all of them male dominated. And so I was there. It was in this London job for 2 years, focusing on essentially opportunities in the waste management, now we call it environmental services arena. And at the end of those 2 years, I had an opportunity to decide, where did I want to go next? And frankly, to be honest, I wanted to go overseas, and the only overseas subsidiary they had happened to be in America. And so when they asked me, I said, oh, I'd quite like to go to America. Well, no one had ever asked them that before. And so they kind of said, oh, I don't even know if we can transfer you there, but we'll see. And they came back to me and said, there's an opportunity. Do you want to go? You're leaving a month from now. Second lesson that I say to young women, take opportunities to get out of the country in which you were born and do it early. Do it early while you don't have all sorts of other hurdles in the way, whether it's family obligations or it's houses or stuff that you accumulate. And so at 23, I took a job in America. I knew nobody in America, but I landed in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, and worked for a subsidiary company that was doing actually mergers and acquisition work in the environmental testing area. And so my boss, who was a man, and actually every single one of my bosses until my current job, where my bosses are the board of 100 women, until then, every single one of my bosses were men. And one of the things that I feel very fortunate that all of the men that I've had as bosses have been incredibly supportive of me in my career. Anyway, so I'm in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, and after 2 years, it's 91. There's a recession in the U.S., and so everybody in the office is laid off. And again, really great learning that. You know, I thought at 25, I thought my life had come to an end. As it turned out, I was employed again immediately after that period was over. And I learned a really valuable lesson. And that is that you have to constantly be thinking about what's the next thing. Not that you're being disloyal, but actually you're thinking about what are the opportunities? How can I you know, make sure that I am protecting my own career, but also looking for opportunities. And I think that's really part of why this schizophrenic career of mine ended up emerging. So I ended up working for an advertising agency in Philadelphia, doing business to business market research. Never done that in my life before. But hey, you know, it was an area that was interesting to me. And the firm took a chance on me. So I spent a number of years there. I then moved to a Caterpillar dealership where I was the marketing and advertising director. And the reason I moved to the dealership was that I wanted to do an MBA, but I didn't want to pay for it. And when I had the interview at the Caterpillar dealership, and they said to me, "We're willing to pay for any course that you'd like to do." And I said, "Does that include an MBA?" And they said, "No one's ever asked us that before, but I guess so." And so they paid for me to do 4 years at LaSalle in Philadelphia. And I did it in the evening. But again, amazing experience, amazing boss that gave me an opportunity. I was the only woman in the office that wasn't a secretary. You know, it was a really interesting time. Moving quickly on to the next job, which was at Unisys. I worked for a couple of years in their computer hardware side, really acting as a translator between the hardware engineers and the sales and marketing team. Again, a completely different role that I really loved, had a boss that was really supportive of me, moving things forward. And then it was the dot-com era in 99. And I left to move to a dot-com company in New York called LivePerson, which I was there for 6 months. I learned a lot about what not to do in that 6 months in terms of business. If you can believe it, my marketing budget was greater than the revenues of the company. That was the dot-com era. That's why they all blew up in the end. At the end of that year, when everything blew up, one of my best friends from Oxford was running a hedge fund. And so he said to me, "Hey, why don't you come and hang out in the office, see what I do? Oh, maybe you could do a bit of research. Remember that market research you used to do? It's just numbers instead of doing focus groups." And so I ended up becoming a partner at this hedge fund for the next 7 years. And it was at that point that I really got involved, and I went on the board of a number of nonprofits, including 100 Women in Finance. And it was also at that point that I realized that I loved the nonprofit space. And it's then that I decided to set up my own business to consult to a number of nonprofit organizations, really around connecting professionals to each other, but also to a philanthropic cause. And so I consulted to my college at Oxford, which was 500 years old, around alumni fundraising. I consulted to the American Red Cross of Greater New York, where I set up a women's business initiative. And I consulted to 100 women. It was then 100 women in hedge funds, now 100 women in finance. And it's that organization that basically took over my life. And so in 2014, they asked me to become CEO of the organization on a full-time basis. And that's why I tell you it's schizophrenic all over the place. And yet I talk all the time. There's a great book by David Epstein called Range, R-A-N-G-E, which really talks about how in a modern career, we have to have a range of experiences, a range of perspectives. And that kind of really speaks to, at least it justifies my crazy career, in that way. Really long answer to your question, but hopefully there are some other things that you might want to ask out of that in terms of entrepreneurship.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, I just want to say that I'm in absolute awe with how amazing and dynamic and persistent you've been throughout your entire career and your life. And I really appreciate how you were able to weave these incredible life lessons into your story as well, because it shows that throughout your journey, it's not just linear going up. An entrepreneur's journey goes like a stock market, right? Like in finance, it goes up and down. And I appreciate how you shared that with the dot-com boom and bust, being at Oxford, to moving to New York. But one theme that I really, really resonated with was your persistence of just asking. I think we hear a lot of stories of women in the business industry, especially in terms of the gender pay gap, about how when women come to the table, they are scared to ask or they're timid to ask supposedly about a higher pay, that opportunity. But I counted two times in your story alone, big times in your life where you merely asked for something and you got that. So I would love to hear about your experience and your perspective about this lesson of women empowering themselves, taking practical advice of how to do you empower. And if this is something you share at 100 Women in Finances or any other lessons that you think are really the deal makers in such fields of empowering women in finance.
So it's interesting you pick up on both gender pay gap and asking for things, because I was not good at asking and I did not pay attention to the pay gap in my early career. So when I joined that firm out of Oxford, never even occurred to me that you could ask for more money than the money they started you on. I just assumed, because there was I had no female peers around me that could say, by the way, don't take what they're giving you, ask for more. So it was 2 years later that I realized that the guy who started at the same time as me did the same job. In fact, I did a better job than he did. But anyway, it was revealed that he was being paid 20% more than me from the beginning. Now,
no,
I'll tell you, I was paid £10,000, which doesn't sound very much, but it felt like a lot to me at the time. He was paid £12,000. Now, that gap is just £2,000, but unfortunately, it's not the pound gap, it's the percentage gap that ultimately becomes really hard to match up with, which is why very often women end up leaving in order to get a higher salary at another place. And I'll give you another example. I had no idea that you could ask for more. And so part of what we're trying to do at 100 Women is to ensure that women have the peer groups they need in order to have those conversations. Because men do it naturally. The power of the old boys network is that in very informal ways, men learn about these things, right? They learn that you don't just ask for that. They learn that at performance time, you know, when you're looking at bonuses, that you don't take anything. And even when you get something that is far more than you expected, you still complain and say, it really isn't enough. And look at what I've done. And, you know, I deserve more, right? Squeaky wheel does get the oil. So that was the first thing. That was the first time. And you know what? I still didn't learn. I still didn't ask for more throughout my career. And part of, I guess, my leaving one company to go to another, that was the opportunity to make more money for what I was you know, for what I was doing. But interestingly, I still didn't ask for more than they offered me. The point at which it really, really came home to me was when I was at Unisys. Again, I found myself in a situation where I was doing the same job as someone else who'd come in at the same time as me with the same qualifications. In fact, I probably was more qualified. And once again, over time, I found out he'd asked for a lot more than I had asked for. And again, it becomes a problem because when I said to, you know, when I went to HR at Unisys and said, hold on a second, we're doing very similar jobs, I'd like to be bumped up. This is not fair. The challenge was the bump up was so great, they couldn't within the HR structure justify that bump up, right? So again, I think as women, we're not thinking about these things. We automatically assume, A, that everything is going to be fair, that the world is fair. It isn't. We all have to advocate for ourselves, which is part of the you must ask. And second of all, you need to do your research, right? And that's partly why these networks are so important. Because I can tell you, I said to my nieces when they came out of university, do not take what they're offering. They said, really? But maybe they won't give us the job. I said, here's the funny thing. If you ask for more, you are more respected than if you didn't ask in the first place. And that is a so common funny. Theme, right? So a lot of what I've experienced, many women in the industry experience. So it's interesting, when I went to the next place, I asked for more than I was offered. So at the .com, I asked for more money than I had to kind of gulp and say it because it felt like an outrageous amount of money. And the fact that they said yes straight away means I probably didn't even ask for enough. But I'll tell you a story in this regard of my own peer group. When I was at the .com, you know, there was a bonus, there was a performance bonus. And I had, and even though it was only 6 months, there was an opportunity for me to get the bonus. I ended up creating, having friendships, which actually last to this day, with two other women who were in different roles from me, but we would come together and we'd talk to each other before the performance review. We would practice with each other what we were going to say. We would encourage each other, because here's the thing about women, we're terrible at promoting ourselves. We're really good at promoting other people and highlighting what's good in other people. And so through that peer engagement, we were able to support each other in making the big ask. And that is a lot, again, of what we're doing with 100 Women, is creating these career-based opportunities for, you know, the early career, mid-career, senior practitioners to connect with other women and share experiences. Because it's only by sharing experiences and supporting each other that we can make that ask. So there's some thoughts about asking. It's very rarely that you ask and you don't get, actually.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like I resonate a lot with that. I feel like throughout college even, I feel like every time I have to ask for an extension for a paper or ask if I can lead on a project, I get a little nervous before doing it. But I think it's so true. The more you ask, the more you get. Kind of switching gears a little, I would love to learn more about how maybe some of your failures from the past have affected your career now, and what your definition of failure is and how that was shaped by your entrepreneurial journey.
Gosh, that's a really difficult one, because it's not that I haven't failed. I failed my first driving test. I failed my grade 5 piano exams. But in my career, I don't think there's such a thing as failure. I'll tell you why, because I think it's all about experiences. Now, while you're going through it, it feels like failure. There are things that can feel like failure. But I actually think as you embrace maybe periods of your career that haven't gone as well as others, that actually they become learning experiences. And one of the things that I also say to women as they're starting out on their careers is that it is actually really hard to make a mistake in terms of picking firms that you want to go and work for in your career, unless you know that the firm you're working for is completely corrupt and fraudulent. That's a mistake, right? But apart from that, we learn wherever we go. It's a journey, and we take those experiences. And so what I'd say is, I mean, I guess in some ways you could say that my lack of asking for that initial salary at the beginning of my career was a failure, was some kind of failing. But actually, not only did I learn from that, I now know what it feels, and I now know how to talk about that to other women who are not going to say, oh, she's always done everything perfectly, right? They're going to be able to say, oh, she did it this, she didn't ask at first, and she learned, and I'm able to make it a personal story. So I actually think, don't get me wrong, it's not about being immodest, and it's not about, it's not that I wasn't afraid at times of making those big decisions, but I think that I was, and I should preface it by saying I've been extraordinarily lucky with the men that have been my bosses, with now, the board that I have. I think some of that is probably decent judgment on setting boundaries, on making sure that I was being authentic in what I was going through. But I do think it's a perspective on life that I have, that it's not about failing. As the examples I gave you, right, are exam situations where there's pass fail. Most of life isn't like that, right? That it's not black and white. And so for me, I just think all of this is opportunity, experience. And frankly, even if you're in a place where you feel like you're not succeeding, there's a way out of it. And the way out of it is often by asking for opportunities to move to a different area where you might be able to, succeed, I guess, in a way that you're not right now, but equally looking for somewhere else to go. And it's on that journey that you learn so much. And one of the things that I heard a number of years ago, and I use it quite a lot, is that as we go through our careers, what we need as women is a compass, not a map, right? If you think about it, most women want this plan, right? We're planners, and I'm a planner too, right? But we want this plan. We want to know exactly where we're going, right? But actually, the challenge with that is the world changes. And so if you think about that map, you may have a destination today. Well, first of all, that destination may change, right? So now you've got this map that actually isn't helpful in getting you to another destination. Secondly, there may be hurdles in the way of getting to that destination in the route that the map shows. If you have a compass, and if you are with a group of people, and this is where the peer group comes, if you're going along your pathway as an entrepreneur, as a woman in a particular industry, and you're able to say, which direction should I go now? Let me use not the map, but let's use the compass. Because actually, by focusing on the compass, you're focusing on the journey and the experiences and the opportunities around you. And it may well be that your pathway is not the straightest or the quickest way to get to a destination, if you have a destination. Very often for women, that's why the notion of a career ladder for women is just so, it just doesn't happen like that. It's a winding path. But actually, that winding path gives you opportunities along the way that you would never have had. So I leave that with people, because I think, again, it takes away this notion that there is a right way and a wrong way to go. There are many ways to get there. And taking the path, the path that maybe wasn't the one that was automatically what you would have thought of, is often going to give you the experiences that ultimately make life exciting and careers full. When I was growing up, many people had the same job in the same company all of their career. Think about that. Can you imagine sitting in the same job? Now it is much more. So my schizophrenic career is nowhere, doesn't sound as crazy to you guys, because you don't even think that you're going to stick around in one company in one role forever. That the compass, not the map, is something that I've only just realized recently is the way that I didn't think of it consciously, but that's the way that I've lived my life and worked through my career.
That is amazing. I love that idea of a compass, not a map. And it's so gratifying, especially when things like COVID or the dot-com boom and bust happen, where it feels like a failure, but in reality, it's just a shift of perception. I was kind of visualizing, the board game Chutes and Ladders, where yes. It goes in like a snake. Yes. And sometimes there's ladders, and then there's the slides that you come down, but then there's a secret pathways. I was sort of thinking like that. There's different ways to get to 100, and you don't know what the dice is going to roll sometimes. So I was loving hearing about your entrepreneurial journey and how you got to where you are, but sort of honing into 100 Women Out of Finance and how we got to where we are today. I know we're at 20 years, so huge anniversary. Congratulations to you. I'm curious to hear about what motivated you to start 100 Women in Finance. How did you practically go into doing it? What sorts of resources did you need? And then with this, what are your hopes and goals for the future generation of women in finance? Perhaps someone like Waylon or myself who are first year university, perhaps looking into going to the finance fields. What do you hope that 100 Women in Finance can help bring to the world?
So I should start by saying I was not one of the co-founders of 100 Women. I was involved very early on, but the three co-founders were actually three women that were in marketing roles at hedge funds. And the reason that I wasn't one of the co-founders was I'd literally just joined the finance industry. I didn't know anything about finance. So I wasn't one of the co-founders. What I was really the person that took the organization global, right? So when I joined 100 Women in Finance, sorry, it was called 100 Women in Hedge Funds at the time, their original goal was literally to find 100 women in the hedge fund space. Wouldn't this be amazing if you could find 100? Well, I took their kind of limited vision, but that actually had some very practical applications in terms of an industry which at the time was obviously very male dominated, as it is still today in many ways, but also a hedge fund industry that was very entrepreneurial, where very often women were the only one within their firm and certainly the only one within their role. And so the ability to create this peer group with other women outside of your firm became really important, because that way you could share experiences. And in the case of the three co-founders of the organization, they shared, business leads, right? There were lots of investors who may invest in this kind of fund, but not this kind of fund. And they were able to share those leads, share experiences, and kind of, even though they're competitors, there are many ways in which they could support each other in their growth. So I joined the organization in early 2002. And I actually ended up at the end of that year, we ran a gala where we raised close to $1 million for industry, philanthropic goal. And that's what really got me involved in the organization. And I am a born organizer of things. I am a born connector of people. And so that gala event, you know, it was a wonderful way for me to connect into an industry that, frankly, I didn't know that well, et cetera, build a network. And I can tell you that many of those women where we did that first gala together, many of them 20 years later are some of my best friends. And so one of the things that I've really got out of 100 Women are those friendships and those amazing opportunities to share experiences and share about the industry more broadly. But I do feel like, even though I am now an employee, that actually the journey has been an entrepreneurial journey. We have built from scratch, from that first location in New York, 27 locations across 4 continents, and we've done it completely organically. So our model is a volunteer-driven model. And so what we saw were women who would move from one country to another country and say, hey, I'd like 100 women here. And we'd say, okay, then you need to put together a group of people and we'll help you figure out how do you put those volunteers. So even today, I run an organization where I have 16 paid staff members, not all of whom are full time. They are all virtual. So we've had this virtual model over 20 years. And then I have about 500 active volunteers who are women and a few brave men in the industry who volunteer, but they act like staff members. I mean, they are the ones executing on the programming. They're the ones raising money at our galas, right? They're the ones co-chairing the peer groups. And what's so critical about that is that these are women, and as I said, a few brave men who are on the front lines of the industry. So my staff can be really great support, but we're not in the industry anymore. So we don't necessarily know what are the topics to address. What are the real hurdles that women are facing? How do we think about getting money from the industry? You know, what should our long-term vision be? All of that comes from the collaboration with our volunteers around the world. And why volunteer? Well, there's this amazing opportunity when you volunteer for 100 women. Yes, there's a lot of work, but A, you're building a peer group of your within your committee. B, you get leadership opportunities that you wouldn't necessarily get in your firm. And C, you get those leadership opportunities in a safe space. So you're learning public speaking when it's your peers, people who are like you, who are going to, you know, if you make a mistake, as I said, I don't believe in mistakes, really. I think many people play out in their head, oh my gosh, what if I say the wrong hit thing? Most people aren't paying attention that closely. And so it really is about building your confidence. And equally, you know, for a lot of those women, it's a way to create visibility. And one of the things that we've learned a lot about during COVID is how to give women visibility. It's something I talk about a lot. The truth is that most women think that if they work hard and they perform, someone will notice them. Someone will give them that promotion. Someone will pay them more. Someone will pay them attention. And it's just not the case. Even in an industry that talks about performance from a financial perspective, the reality is, if people don't know you exist, you're never going to grow your brand. And if you're a portfolio manager, you're never going to grow your business. And so what we're really keen on, and what the industry, what the organization can do for young women all the way through to senior practitioners in the industry, is to give you a platform. And as a volunteer, you're introducing, you're moderating a panel, you're engaging, you're interacting with very senior people in the industry. They're going to know you now exist. And as I say, you know, when you get on a stage, whether it's virtual or real, people think you're smarter than you actually are. That platform changes the perspective of the people who work with you who you work for and those that are likely to be invested in you. And for lots of reasons, as an entrepreneur in particular, and I see these female portfolio managers as entrepreneurs in their own space because they're running a fund, right? They're managing that own fund. If they're not out there talking about what they're expert at, then investors aren't going to invest in them. It's not just about the performance. Equally, if you're running a fintech firm, right, which is this wonderful combination of technology and finance, really having an impact on the world, particularly in the developing world, actually, you know, this is an area where I'm really keen for young women to know that it exists, that you don't have to go into the pure technology world. You can go into a field where you can have an impact on the lives of ordinary people through this technology and finance perspective. But again, if you're not visible as an entrepreneur, you're not going to attract investors. And it is this curiosity that as women, I think perfectionism and thinking that if we perform, then we're going to be noticed. It's a curiosity that many women in many different fields suffer from that. And so so what I'd say is 100 women is A, wanting to give opportunity to the next generation of pre-career young women to learn about the industry, to learn about the roles. And we want to overcome these misperceptions about the industry. Many people think of finance as a place that's just about making rich people richer. Actually, 80% of the assets managed by the industry are managed for pension funds, for endowments, for foundations. And think about what those institutions use their money for. They provide pensions for teachers so that teachers can retire earlier than they could have done if they outperform, if the financial outperformance, the financial outperformance translates into a bigger pension, ability to retire sooner if need be. Endowments, think about universities that have created these endowments that can then be used to underwrite scholarships for students who would never have been able to take hold of those opportunities. And then foundations, you know, charitable entities that are able to scale up their operations by actually using those investments in really fantastic and life-changing ways. We want young women to know you could go, yes, you could go into the nonprofit space in a traditional way, but actually, if you want to make an impact in the nonprofit space, go and run an investment, go and be the chief investment officer of a charitable foundation, right? Where you're actually going to be able to scale up financially what you can do in order to have an impact. So we are talking to a lot of universities. We're investing in program partners that are working with high school girls. We have a number of programs that we're funding around the world, all with the aim of getting young women excited about investing, excited about new areas in finance like fintech, and really demystifying a lot of the areas. And again, we know that having an impact on the world is critically important to many young women, and whether that's environmental change, whether it's having an impact on the poorest people in society, the truth is that being part of the financial world, you can make those changes in a way that you can't outside of the financial world. So really setting those opportunities up is something that's really critical to us. So at 100 Women, our corporate sponsors are underwriting free memberships to female students at university. Very easy way for female students to become connected early on with 100 Women. You have access to all of the programming that we have around the industry, so you can learn about different roles. You can learn the terminology. And we're actually piloting right now a program called Jumpstart, which is going to be a pre-internship program where we're introducing first and second year female students around the world to the world of finance, to the roles in finance. You're going to meet female role models from different firms. And then we're going to talk about how do you think about getting an internship in the finance industry? How do you prepare for an interview? With the idea that we'll see more women applying for those finance internships and coming into the industry as we move forward. I could go on and on about the ways that we're trying to reach out to the next generation, but really encourage young women, whether they're thinking about finance or not. Let me tell you, everybody needs to know about investing. Even if it doesn't become your career, it does become critically important to your own independence and your livelihood as you go through life. So well worth at least learning something about it, even if it isn't your chosen career at the end of the day.
Yeah, for sure. That was so beautiful. And I definitely will try to get some friends involved in 100 Women in Finance. As we begin to wrap up the podcast, we love to ask our guests, what is one thing that you loved about yourself today?
Oh, gosh, what did I love about myself? Gosh, that's a really hard one. What did I love about myself today? Well, I think what I love about myself is something that I often love, and that is my ability to interact with people in different stages of their life. And hopefully, I mean, I'd like to think that I'm able to, in every conversation I've had today, and I've had many conversations with different women and men in the industry, and of course yourself, that I'm able to impart one thing that enables someone who perhaps was a bit stuck or didn't know where to go next to move forward. So I guess that's what I love about myself today, as I think back to the conversations I've had, that hopefully I've given something to every single person that I've talked to today. And hopefully that's the same with you guys as well.
Absolutely. To piggyback off of Waylon, to talk about one of our last questions we'd like to ask, I would love to ask you, what is something that you are grateful for today?
I'm grateful for a family and for a mum and dad that let me be whatever I wanted to be and let me go. My parents did not leave the UK until they were 40 years old. And yet at 14, they let me go to Paris on my own. I did that journey on my own, which is slightly frightening for any parents out there today. They let me go and encouraged me to fly. And I think, I was able to take on all sorts of opportunities that they never had. You know, my dad had to leave school at 15 to get a job. He would have loved to have gone to Oxford, right? So I'm grateful that he enabled me. He was passionate about education and passionate about really giving me the opportunity to launch. They didn't have very much, but they gave me the love and really my ability to be whatever I wanted to be and to dream big. And so I think that's what I'm really grateful for every day.
And to end us off today, if you could describe what entrepreneurship means to you in a couple words or a sentence, what would that be?
I think it is having a vision, having a dream, and being able to execute on it. That to me is entrepreneurship. It's a very unique combination, because most people are either dreamers or executors of ideas. Very few people are both. So that to me is what an entrepreneur is. And I'm, again, it's something that I've learned only over the last few years. I always thought of myself as a really great executor of other people's ideas. But I'm in this great, I have this great opportunity now where I can actually dream, and I know also how we're going to get there and how we're going to execute. So that's what I would say, is that very unique combination. I think it's inside everybody, though. I think it's just a matter of having the guts to do it.
I love that. Absolutely. And for our audience who want to connect with you or connect with 100 Women in Finance, how can they go about doing that?
So you can certainly connect with me on LinkedIn. And so Amanda Pollinger on LinkedIn. Or you can go to our website, 100women.org.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so, so, so much for coming on. I can definitely speak for myself and Waylon, and I'm sure our audience as well, that we learned so much from you today and just learned about the finance industry with women, lessons to take, and insights for how to navigate the world of entrepreneurship with women in finance, but also just in general. I really, really, really appreciate having you on today.
Thank you for tuning in today. We hope you learned a lot and got some inspiration from Amanda. Be sure to check out our past and future podcast episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you're listening to this podcast now. To stay tuned with what's going on in the Entrepreneurs Podcast Network, join our community on Instagram, LinkedIn, and feel free to reach out to us to share an entrepreneurial journey. See you next time.